everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the Postmodern Realities Podcast, brought to you by the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. I'm Melanie Cogdill, Managing Editor of the Christian Research Journal. It's December 2024. This is the last podcast of this year, and you're listening to episode 426, which is a conversation about religious TikTok influencer Reverend Carla. Today's guest is Anne Kennedy. She has an MDiv and is the author of Nailed It, 365 Readings for Angry or Worn Out People, and blogs about current events and theological trends on her Substack, Demotivations with Anne. Anne has written an article about Reverend Carla Kamstra for her Theological Trends column, and her article is called Leaving Church, Finding a Platform, a Look at the Content of Reverend Carla. And you can read it for free on our website, equip.org. That's EQUIP.org. Anne, it's good to have you on the podcast again.
It's great to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
As I just noted, Anne has written an article in her Theological Trends column for our journal about a woman named Reverend Carla Kamstra, and I had not heard of her until I had read about her in the New York Times. And the reason why they were featuring her is she seems like she's the new, like, spiritual mother of TikTok, with more than 730,000 followers. So that seems closer to a million to me, getting towards there, than less than a million. And so she's been kind of this Mr. Rogers-esque type of spiritual figure on TikTok. So why are we talking about her today? Like I said before, the New York Times, I didn't even know who she was. So who is she?
Well, she's on TikTok, and she had a book come out. So that's one reason why I think she's more in the news. It came out in October, and she is very famous on TikTok. She's one of, at least on the cover of the book, it says TikTok's beloved Rev Carla. And she is a deconstructor. She was a self-identified Christian for most of her adult life, it seems like. And, but her book and her presence online and a lot of people following her make her a subject of inquiry for me. And it's interesting, just in the last, you know, I've been following her for a little bit. She's also very political. And so I think people follow her for her sort of political / spiritual content. She's an influencer. So that's why we're talking about her today. I would say she's very run of the mill kind of influencer, TikTok person. The thing that I found interesting about her is that she's a little older. I think she's about 60 years old. And so she's not a young TikToker. She's a person who has mastered the platform, as a boomer, which she readily acknowledges. And she is very good at it. She's just kind of the typical person who knows how to use filters, respond to other people, put music over it. She does a lot of TikToks where she's not saying anything. It's just a sort of block of text and some music, and she's standing there and you just look at the expression on her face. And I'm younger than her, but I have no idea how I would go about building such a platform. So I think it's pretty interesting that she's mastered it in terms of generational, divides. She's not a millennial or a Gen Z person, but she does have that kind of ethos. And her book is very popular. It was on the New York Times bestseller for a little bit. I couldn't exactly figure out how long it was on the list, but it was there for a bit. And so she's very popular.
It's really interesting that amongst everything the algorithm serves up, it also serves up people who are, I guess, offering some kind of spiritual advice online to, well, probably, like you said, she's like a baby boomer who has figured out how to master this particular platform and get her message out there to young people. And some of the content that I saw before, she kind of had certain content a longer time ago before the election, then she got increasingly political. So you mentioned that she had a book published, come out in October. So what is her book about, and what is the thesis of her book?
So the book is called Deconstructing, Leaving Church, Finding Faith. And it's sort of a memoir. She does have a lot of anecdotes about her life, and she uses her own process of deconstruction as a sort of template that she offers to the reader. But it's more than a memoir. It's kind of a how-to. At the end of every chapter, she offers advice, practical advice about what to do if you're wanting to deconstruct. And she's very warm, very pastoral. She addresses the reader as beloved. And so it's not an apology for why you should deconstruct. It's if you are already leaving or the Christian faith or disaffected and you don't want to go to church anymore, what should you do? She has a lot of encouragement about why what you're doing is good and you shouldn't question that. You should go ahead and leave. But here's what you can expect. You know, you'll be lonely at certain points. You might feel angry and sad. You'll have a hard time finding community, that kind of thing. There's just a lot of practical application, but it also is very much her own how she left the church and how the church was bad for her. And it's not too much deeper than that. There's a chapter on the divine feminine. There's a chapter on how you should not continue to be angry with Christians and with the church, but you should kind of get to a point of some kind of reconciliation where, you know, you wouldn't necessarily go back to church, but you're not going to throw everything away from a churched background. You would admit that some things were good. What should you do about trauma that you've experienced in the church? And then just the last chapter is life after deconstruction or deconstructing. So I'm using her term deconstruction because that's the term that everybody uses. But essentially what we're talking about is a person who apostatizes, who did at one time profess faith and then later denied or rejected that faith. I would say reading her book that she never understood what it meant to be a Christian. That comes through very clearly. So when you say, I would say she probably isn't leaving faith because she probably didn't have it. But she did from a public sort of, you know, she worked in a church. She had different church jobs. She taught Sunday school, that kind of thing.
Tell us a little bit more about her journey. I do know from just reading, you know, like publicity online for the book that she said that her deconstructing journey began when she was 50. So that sent her on a trajectory. Like you said, well, did she believe it in the first place? Did she, since she is more of a boomer, did she come from kind of some of the stories that we're hearing from the younger generation that grew up in evangelical spaces where they went to evangelical schools all the way through and or colleges and then came to a realization that I don't believe this anymore type of a journey of maybe some of the Gen Z women that we're hearing about deciding that they no longer believe in Christianity, or was her journey something different?
She was later in life. I think what precipitated her actually leaving was that she wanted to become ordained. So she began life as a Southern Baptist as a little kid. Her grandmother was Southern Baptist and took her to church, and she was baptized as a Southern Baptist. And then over time, she went to a Presbyterian, more Presbyterian church, and it seemed like she was kind of drifting into a more liberal or progressive vein through her adult life, but she was very invested in church, whichever kind of church she was in at the time, and would kind of be all in. But it seems that she very much desired to be ordained. And the church that she was in didn't say no to that outright. They invited her into sort of an in-house ministry preparation training situation. That's not, I added a lot of words there. I'm sure that's not what it was called, ministry situation, but they had an in-house training program and she was invited to be a part of that. And then as it went on, she discovered that she would not be able to be ordained as part of that process. And she also, as she went on, became fully affirming of the LGBT lifestyle. She herself doesn't identify as a lesbian. She's married and has a child, and I think a stepchild. And she online, her part of her persona is that she's affirming. She's very desirous of people feeling fully included, as she says. And she's often wearing a rainbow stole. That's kind of her main headshot picture. And so those two things, I think, really pushed her out of the church, or were the impetus for why she left ultimately, which is very usual. I think that's probably true for a lot of Gen Zers, and a lot of boomers actually, the becoming fully affirming and for her personal desire to be ordained. And I don't know if she was actually in a church that would have ordained her. I couldn't quite tell from the book, and that they just didn't want to, but it seems like it was partly because she was a woman. And so maybe there was a misunderstanding as she entered this program. She discovered that they weren't going to ordain her, and that upset her. She gradually left. She just fully embraced a progressive idea that the church's patriarchal system that puts women down and is unfair to LGBT people. So it just that was the breaking point for her.
As I noted at the top of this podcast, this is the last episode for this year, 2024, and we are heading into 2025 with so many interesting topics that we have in store for all of you next year. But this is also time, you've only got another day or so to make your final donations for 2024 to your favorite nonprofit organizations and causes. And I hope that you will remember the Christian Research Journal. Now that we are not a subscription-based magazine, I hope that you've been enjoying all of the free content that you get every single week, not only in the form of this podcast with very interesting interviews with our authors, but also being able to read their articles on our website completely free, without a paywall, and without a paid subscription. So we are hoping that you will give us maybe more than a tip if you've been giving us tips regularly. If you haven't been giving tips and would like to tip us this year for our content, we would be so grateful. It's easy to go to our webpage and go to Postmodern Realities, which is under the Journal tab, and then any of the landing pages has a link where you can give us a tip and maybe consider giving us a very generous tip at the end of the year. Normally, in the past, a subscription would be $33.50 for the year, but I think right now we're giving you more content than we did when we were a paid subscription magazine. So everything is free online for everybody worldwide now, and so I would like to ask you to please remember us in your year-end giving and think about this podcast and the Christian Research Journal and its outreach through the Christian Research Institute. If right now in your budget you don't have the funds available to make a financial partnering donation, would you please consider giving us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts in particular? Last time I looked, which was this week, the last written review, and they're about a sentence long. It does take some time, but less than 5 minutes of your time, and it's free. It's just the gift of your time. If to go on there, last time I looked, I think the last actual written review we got was back in the summer. So it's been more than 6 months. I would love to see a whole bunch of new ones for the end of the year. So if you've been listening faithfully and you just have not gotten around to rating and reviewing our podcast, that would be so great because it helps us out with the algorithm. Well, now back to my conversation about Rev Carla of TikTok with Ann Kennedy. Besides her church experience, which sounds varied to me, I mean, from Southern Baptist to progressive mainline Christian spaces seems like a divide. I mean, it seems like she just, her journey wasn't just particularly only in one denomination or anything like that. Although wherever she ended up, it sounds like they wouldn't ordain her and she wanted to be ordained. But what does she say in particular about some essentials of the Christian faith? Like the Bible is the word of God and it is inerrant and it is authoritative. Does she have any opinions on that?
She doesn't go very far into the question of scripture. As if you read her book or look at her content, you'll see that there's a lot of small errors. Well, I wouldn't call them small, but her use of Christian terminology is slightly off. So at one point in the book, she says, you know, when we were young, we were all taught that Jesus is the Father in heaven. Most people who are Orthodox Christian aren't taught that Jesus is the Father in heaven because he's the Son. So there's little things like that that you realize, well, she was not well-trained as a young person and then probably through her life. Or maybe she's forgotten things. I'm not sure. But her grasp of scripture isn't very deep. But she does have, I was quite interested in the book, she does have a section where she actually deals or brings up many of the texts about homosexuality. She lists them all and essentially says, you know, you are going to have to deal with these if you're going to deconstruct, if you really believe them. It'll be hard for you. I mean, it says this in the Bible, which I, some readers know that I just reviewed The Winding of God's Mercy by Richard and Christopher Hayes, and they don't bring up these texts. So I thought that was kind of interesting that she goes ahead and lists them. And she does say, you know, most Christians believe that Jesus rose from the dead, that he's divine and human. But so she doesn't exactly shy away from it, but she doesn't think that the Bible is authoritative at all. And I think if you look at her content, the only reason that you might use a Bible verse is if you have some feelings of nostalgia about it, and it just makes you feel good to have a Bible verse somewhere if it works for you. So she doesn't necessarily shy away, but I was interested. She listed these texts that I think people have a lot of trouble with, and then says it's okay to let go of them. She even answers the question, because people have said to her, what if you're wrong about the Bible and God? And she says that you just shouldn't worry about that, because that's living in a fear-based system, and you need to find your own path. So don't worry about being wrong. That's kind of part of the whole patriarchal system that's holding you down.
So what does she think about Christ? I mean, does she think that he's just a good teacher? She mentions these verses in the Bible, but she doesn't really say, well, you can be, I guess she's considering herself a sort of Christian. I mean, when she says she's calling herself Rev Carla, is she saying I'm a certain kind of Christian? I'm not the evangelical Christians that are trying to put you down and not welcoming you. I want to be welcoming. Or what is her view? Like you said, it seems like her view of the Trinity is shaky. Does she have certain views about Christ or about who God even is that she's the Rev of?
Well, she only would say that you should think about God or using the word God if you feel that that is useful for you. So if you are a person who wants to be spiritual, but you don't feel that thinking about a person called God is helpful, it's okay to jettison that. For her personally, she said she had to grapple with who Jesus is as part of her deconstruction, because, I mean, she did start her life as a Southern Baptist and, you know, she was Presbyterian, and Jesus is a really big part of that world. She calls herself a Christian when she kind of feels like it, because she feels like all the time that she invested as a Christian before her deconstruction gives her the license or a reason to continue to use that term, because it's meaningful for her. Again, in a sort of a nostalgic sense, I think. There's nothing Christian about her actual worldview or content. And so her view of Jesus, she was taught as a child that she needed to love Jesus and be in love with Jesus. But she found that that was kind of, it just, as she deconstructed, that she did not need a savior. That was essentially the most important thing that she discovered. And so she had to reimagine Jesus as somebody that she could still love as a deconstructed adult. And what was particularly interesting about this to me is that she ended up believing that he's divine, because not a savior of the world kind of divine, but because he says in the Bible that he is in you, that means that you are also divine. So I'll just read this bit. I have no problem accepting his divinity, because he said what is in him is also in me. Who he was is also who I am. This means that we are all divine. So she accepts Jesus kind of on those terms, but that works for her. So, of course, another person would probably want to have nothing to do with Jesus in the Christian in Christian terms, or in pagan ones as well. So it's just, that's how it works. It's a very personal choice kind of spiritual journey.
So one thing you mentioned in your article about her book and just her, you know, worldview and her platform is you mentioned that she's been influenced by various different Christian writers, and I found them to be very desperate. Like, they were so different. So she, I guess, looked to C.S. Lewis, but also to John Shelby Spong, the late John Shelby Spong, and we will link in the show notes of this episode. We have done some critiques of a book that Spong wrote that was popular at the time before his death. But that seems like a very wide, I guess, type of resources of Christian writers that she was going to. I mean, from C.S. Lewis to Spong, the divide is quite wide there. They're very, very different.
Yeah, it really shocked me. One person that also sort of was important in her path of deconstruction was Henry VIII. So she developed for a while an obsession with Henry VIII and read everything she could about him. That's what she says. But I don't think she read everything she could, because he's a very nuanced guy. he's a bad person, but it's not simply that because he wanted a divorce, therefore we have the Church of England. It's just a much more complicated story than that. So, but he was sort of a catalyst for a while in spurring her towards deconstruction. And it was in studying his life that she discovered, she says, that the church is completely man-made, and it's only because men want power that there is the church. So she just dismisses church and a huge part of Christian history because of this discovery that she made about Henry VIII. So from there, she moves to C.S. Lewis, and she claims that reading C.S. Lewis in her evangelical world would have marked her as a heretic. I just found that to be an amazing thought. I knew Southern Baptists in the 80s, and 90s myself, and all of them read C.S. Lewis. So I grew up on the mission field in a very conservative Baptist, Southern Baptist, Christian Missionary Alliance kind of world. And everybody I knew read C.S. Lewis. So I was kind of amazed that she thought that he was a subversive figure. In fact, he's done so much for bringing people into Christianity. Mere Christianity was a series of apologetics talks that he did on the radio that just served to bring many, many people around the world to faith in Christ. So I was very confused about how he would be such an important part of her leaving the church. It made me really question what she knows, what happens to her when she reads a book. I was astonished because then, yes, she went from that to John Shelby Spong, who's a noted heretic, American bishop, who was a byword even when I was young in the Episcopal Church. People who were kind of liberal admitted that he was completely off the rails and was not a trustworthy person. He ran his diocese into the ground, and even progressive people acknowledged that at the time. So, but she also, in the book, talks about how she really loves Bart Ehrman and Rachel Held Evans and other kinds of people. So she was reading in one direction out of the church, and I would question how much she was really able to grasp what she was reading, because some of those people probably weren't leading her in the direction that she is in now.
So she talks a little bit about, like you mentioned, that she talks about just her journey not being able to be ordained and the patriarchy, which seems like when we have these conversations about various female influencers, the patriarchy is kind of like the boogeyman in the background. I mean, it's very writ large, it seems like, to a lot of younger women, and also obviously for her. So she talks about, you mentioned in your article, the divine feminine. So can you tell us what the divine feminine is?
Well, so this is a place I'm on shaky ground here, because I have read about the divine feminine here and there. And there is a strain in Christianity that tries to, I wouldn't maybe call it real Christianity, but on the fringes of some Catholicism, and like Richard Rohr, who wants to talk about the cosmic Christ, that you can kind of maybe a little bit of yin and yang, that there's the divine feminine and there's the divine masculine, and it's the sort of energy force that's present in every person, and it kind of ebbs and flows. For Kamstra, part of her deconstruction from Christianity was to discover that God isn't male per se. He's, although she continues to use male pronouns for God throughout, and she makes an apology for that. Again, it's because it's what she feels comfortable doing, but you shouldn't do it if you don't feel comfortable. But whatever it is, God or whoever, is sort of equal parts masculine and feminine, and it's part of the patriarchy that the feminine part has gotten lost. So it's important to rediscover the wisdom of the divine feminine, and it's present everywhere. She says even Roman Catholics would revere the Virgin Mary, and that's part of leaning towards this divine feminine side. It's wrapped up in being partly God yourself, but in a sort of gendered form. And when you don't sort of accept and live into this, I'm not exactly sure how you would do that, but if you don't do it, you risk becoming toxic. You can have toxic masculinity. I guess you could probably have toxic femininity, although I don't run into that quite so much. But you should just explore this. How does this divine energy live in you? How can you be more in touch with it? You should explore that for yourself and it'll be good for you. And she has a whole chapter on it in the book, and I found it to be kind of interesting, but also very woo, if that's a word I can use.
So is she a sort of feminist, theological feminist, or not really? She's just, it seems like she's so over the map. You know, she calls herself Rev Carla, but I'm not really sure how she defines herself theologically. Like, what is she a reverend of? All of her followers, of social media?
Well, so you can go to the seminary that she went to is called One Spirit Seminary, and you can get a degree. I don't know if it's called a Master of Divinity. I doubt it, but you get some kind of credential that allows you to call yourself a reverend. I don't know that there's any particular like ordination service, but if you look around the website, there's people who sort of start quote ministries, who have social media online presence, who might do different kinds of, you know, nonprofit work, who are sort of spiritual people, and they all call themselves reverend. So she doesn't have a church. She doesn't go to church. She's de-churched, which was hard for her because church was such an essential part of her life, for all of her life, even her adult life. She would be in church, she said, whenever it was open. She worked on staff. She worked as an unpaid volunteer. She taught Sunday school. She was just really invested in the church as an institution. And now she's completely, has nothing. She does not go to church. She does not meet with other people on Sunday. If you look at some of her TikToks, she does, she uses crystals and some sort of pagan kind of witchy elements to memorialize her feelings and her state of mind at any particular moment. But I would say she would probably consider that her social media, her followers constitute some kind of, you know, spiritual influence for her, that she is pastoring in some sense a group of people who follow her online. And that's where you mentioned she's kind of a Mr. Rogers type persona. She's very warm and friendly and very sarcastic at the same time, and quick to go after people who disagree with her or she thinks they're wrong. She makes lots of TikToks about people she thinks are saying untrue or unhelpful things, usually about politics. It is a spiritual enterprise that she has going on, but it's not one grounded in sort of traditional theology. Certainly no specific ideas about God, or no ideas of doctrine, or even like how you would live, other than to just sort of be a good person, I would imagine. I don't think that you can be a good person and be a political conservative. That's definitely off the table. But other than that, it's very loosey-goosey and not related to specific doctrinal content or anything like that.
You mentioned that she's pretty political. I looked at her content. It's the same content on Instagram, but really where she's found the foothold is on TikTok, because she's over 700,000 followers. And on Instagram, I think she doesn't even have 50,000 followers. But she, like you said, she is sarcastic, but she has this like motherly tone, I would say, even while she's condemning people she doesn't agree with. And so she tries to be welcoming, and then also, I don't know, how can you be angry in a nice way? I guess she says, like, you know, you are welcome here. Don't let people tell you you're not accepted for whoever you want to be. So is that mainly the kind of advice that she has for people who are saying, I feel uncomfortable in the church, or should I leave the church, or I have left the church?
Yeah, it's not very deep. It's more affirmation. If you feel it's time to go, you should go. If you feel like you're going to stay for a little while, that's okay too. But you know, you should definitely become affirming. You should definitely embrace your divine feminine. You should definitely reject the patriarchy completely. Those are givens for her, but also you can live in whatever, you know, if you aren't ready to leave church or you find that it works for you to go, that's okay. You shouldn't be judgmental of other people. And she is very warm. It isn't deep at all. But it is, you're right. It's very motherly. And I think it's very warm. And because like a lot of content, it's pretty predictable. So I think it's probably comforting for a lot of people who feel stressed and unhappy, or they don't want to be in the church and they're lonely. And so here's this wonderful person who appears in their feed over and over again, smiling and saying, you're beautiful, whoever you are, you're beloved. You should choose your gender identity. If you feel like a woman trapped in a man's body, that's very beautiful. Whatever it is for you, I'm here to affirm you. That's, I think, a really powerful dopamine hit whenever you come across it in your feed for people who feel unmoored and are not connected to any substantive spiritual system, but don't also probably have family. Increasingly, I think with the election especially, she did several TikToks about how if you felt like you had to cut your family off, that would be, and that worked for you, that would be very good. And that's okay. Don't feel like you've done the wrong thing. Don't let anybody get you down. And when you feel really lonely, yes, of course you feel lonely. That's okay too, kind of, which I found really shocking. We keep hearing about a loneliness epidemic, and I think encouraging people to cut off their families because of politics is a really, really terrible idea. But she disagrees with me.
Why do you think for spiritual advice, she's just resonated with so many people? Is it because, I mean, and I don't know what the demographics of her followers are. Are they all over the map? I don't know that we could know that actually, except for her. Maybe she could run some analytics. But what is her appeal? Just that she's telling people they can do whatever they want. And as a quote unquote reverend, she's agreeing with them, whatever that is. Except, of course, as you said, to disagree with her point of view.
Yeah, I think she appears to be kind of intellectual. She has the persona of knowledge and wisdom, and she's saying all the things that people who sound smart today would say. So, in that sense, she's just very agreeable to the kind of people who feel alienated by Christianity. And it's interesting because, you know, a lot, you know, millions of people have left the church over the last 25 years. That book, The Great Dechurching, is such an interesting look at that. Lots and lots of people just found that church isn't for them. And they may not have had deconstructing feelings about it. You know, they just drifted away. But if you can form an identity around something like that, like, oh, I was hurt, or, oh, this went wrong for me. And I think even if you had a vague idea of, oh, I just don't want to go to church anymore, and you didn't even know why, and you came across Rev Carla, she would give you a whole lot of reasons that are very acceptable for the moment. And she would give you language to talk about it. She would give you a sense of peace that you had done the right thing and that you just should not bother to go back. So I think because there are many, many people out there who have just stopped going, who've stopped identifying as Christian and who feel rootless, people like Carla Campstra are a heady drug. I think they just give people what they are looking for anyway in a very bite-sized digestible package. And so I think that's why she's so popular. And of course the algorithm feeds that. So if she's showing up in certain kinds of feeds, people are looking for that, they're going to find it. And then if they watch it more, they'll watch more and more and more of it. And so she even talked recently about feeding the beast, kind of that she knows, she's realizing that a lot of the content that she's made is being driven by the algorithm. And so, you know, it was very profitable for probably for TikTok. And I don't know if she's making money, but it just feeds on itself. And in some sense, it's sort of spiritual, you know, because it acknowledges that you're a spiritual being. It doesn't have substantive doctrinal content, as I said, but it does acknowledge that you're not just a materialist being. There's something beyond you that you should, that it's okay to feel feelings about without having to delve in it substantially, not without having to think about what it actually means or the implications of what of anything. But I also, it does feel a little bit like an inoculation. So if you were a young person who had grown up in church and you just didn't want to go anymore, you knew some of the jargon, Christian jargon, but not all of it. And you felt uncomfortable in a youth group or something like that. And then you came across Rev Carla, you would just be given a whole world of reasons why your vague feelings were totally legitimate and that you don't need to pursue any more thoughts about that. You shouldn't investigate the Christian faith. It's not worth it. It's meaningless, or it's bad even. It's better just to continue on the path that you're on. And if anybody gets in your way, they're a hater and they don't love you. That's, I mean, honestly, it feels to me totally demonic, but it's how a lot of social media works anyway. And it's very powerful and therefore, I think, very dangerous.
What's really interesting to me across all kinds of subgenres of interest, you know, for people who are, I've said in other podcasts, like if you love knitting, there's a group for you on TikTok. If you like, you know, art history, name it, religion, there's something for you. And then if you amass all these followers, it seems like publishers or things like that are like, ooh, boy, you have a million followers. You're not a trained chef, but let's give you a cookbook because these are just all of your recipes, you know, from your grandma or whatever. So they publish these things and they sell well. And I guess that's why Reverend Carla, she must have something to say. So a publisher thought, wow, let's just gather it together. So does she have any kind of like systematic theology or just overall apologetic for people struggling in their faith? Or is it she just too vague to, because she wrote a whole book. I mean, is she too vague to pin down on you know, how do people take her worldview and live by it, I guess? Just do whatever they want?
I mean, she doesn't have any systematic theological worldview other than she's spiritual, not religious. And I would add, though she wouldn't probably say this, that she's political as a religion, that spirituality and politics have very much come to be wedded together in a lot of her content. And, but I don't think she would probably acknowledge that. It's just from watching a lot of her TikToks that that's what it appears to me. I think she would definitely say whatever works for you is fine, as long as you're affirming and as long as you're a feminist and you reject the patriarchy. Those are the highest goods. It doesn't, who God is secondary. That's really something you can decide for yourself. So that's sort of, I guess, run of the mill American spiritualism right now, the kind that you find everywhere. That's not well thought out, but it has kind of a moral veneer over it. So it gives you some framework for how you might live your life or how you might think of the world. You know, because I've watched a lot of people talk about manifesting and things like that. You know, she would probably say that that's fine if that works for you. Although I was pleased to see that she had a short TikTok explaining to somebody who was telling her that she shouldn't say negative things because she would manifest negativity into her life and that she should be careful about that. She answered that person pretty swiftly and well. I thought that that's ridiculous. Thinking bad thoughts isn't going to bring the universe down on your head. So there's some sort of flashes of sense here and there, but she doesn't flesh them out. She just takes them as a given. And there's no systematic theology other than the self being very highly valued as long as it conforms to certain moral goods of the moment, like being affirming of the LGBT acronym.
Our listeners can look for Anne's review on our website about the dechurching, but I think a familiar theme in most of these stories is that people kind of feel some kind of a religious trauma, that they've been harmed by the church. And so it just feeds into this emotional doubt. And then they find themselves to Reverend Carla. So I would just like to ask you as we end, somebody might think, well, Reverend Carla sounds good to me. I mean, I am having emotional doubt because any number of things. A lot of times it will be Anne's husband, Matt, has written an article for us on what to do, how parents might change their minds about homosexuality based on their own experience or their kids or something like that. And so what is a word that you have for people who are just struggling with emotional doubt and saying, okay, the church has harmed me. This happened to me. The church is full of hypocrites. They were never there for me. And so I've just been wounded and have this trauma. And so therefore, maybe I need to deconstruct from Christianity and reconstruct my own religion. It kind of seems like Reverend Carla's taken a little bit here and there from all different kinds of spiritual sources.
I've been thinking about this recently. I think that the question of spiritual trauma and that how quickly it's referred to, people appeal to it very quickly when they are thinking about leaving the church, or they just feel like they don't believe anymore. They don't know what they believe in. And there are two aspects of it that I think are really crucial. The first is that when somebody lies about God, especially a minister or a Sunday school teacher or somebody who is in authority, whenever somebody lies about God, it is uniquely hurtful. So anybody who is in authority who says something to a child, for example, like God didn't create the world, or Jesus isn't God, or God isn't three in one. There's all kinds of different ways that you can kind of lie about God, either through ignorance or on purpose. Those lies are uniquely hurtful. And so there are churches, I would say, usually progressive ones, but another way to lie is by behaving very badly and cruelly to somebody, that those kinds of experiences are more painful than other kinds of lies. Like if you come across a lie on Twitter, it's not as hurtful as if your pastor stands up in the pulpit and says, Jesus isn't God. So I don't think we have good language to account for the kinds of hurt that people endure in church because of incompetence or actual lying on the part of clergy or other people in authority.
But I think sometimes at least as I've heard explained to me in terms of trauma, because it seems that is a buzzword for Gen Z
right. People.
And especially if you're older than Gen Z, I had someone tell me that I didn't understand trauma because I was old. So
the other issue though, is the flip side of that, is that anytime you talk about sin in a church, people are going to feel sad. And so when a pastor is telling the truth about who God is and who the human person is, many people are going to feel very sad and uncomfortable because they are sinners. And so that's where I think the two get sort of jumbled together by many people. They think, okay, well, I've been told I'm a sinner. I've been traumatized. I've experienced church hurt because somebody told me I was wrong, or somebody sinned against me, an ordinary person sinned against me, that I've experienced church hurt. That Kamster's book has got several in places where ordinary people, it seemed like, not even the pastor, sinned against her, and she counts that as church hurt. And I think that those two things, both like the truths that people tell and the lies that people tell, because Christians or people in church are so unmoored and so badly educated as Christians, they get jumbled together. And then people who feel a morass of angst have nowhere to put it, and then they just leave. And I think it would behoove a lot of us in the church to try to untangle that for ourselves, so that we're able to quickly, first of all, apologize if we sin against somebody, but second of all, be able to say, if you were lied to, that's very bad. But if you were told you were a sinner, that's actually true. And let me help you sort through what that means and why it's a good thing for you to know that you have occasionally done bad things in your life.
I think some of the church hurt also stems from somebody had a personal crisis and they say, well, Christians are called to higher standard, yet the church didn't help, I don't know, my family when my mom went through a divorce, or my brother who was a drug addict, or whatever the case may be, or, you know, my kid was bullied in youth group or whatever. And so they leave that at the door, I guess, of the entire congregation and say, well, this religion, they're not any different. So how do we encourage people to, you know, I like the idea. You got to look at yourself too. If you've sinned against someone, you need to go and, you know, tell that person, ask for forgiveness, repent of what you did. If you've, you know, spoken about them in an untrue or an unkind way or whatever it is, we have to also look to see how do we move through church life. But how do people balance that? Listening to the truth that they are sinners, that things that people do that they love dearly, maybe a family member, that we can't condone that because we love them. So the cost might be high to you personally, but how do people navigate that? Because it does seem real that they're saying, okay, it's trauma now.
I think I would say this to anybody who's listened to, who appreciates Rev. Carla's content. Even lately, she's acknowledging that she's losing a lot of followers because she started to talk about prepping a lot. Everybody will disappoint you. Even the person that you watched on that's helped you, you thought that person at some point is going to disappoint you. Everybody is going to be disappointing in one way or another. The only person who really can't disappoint you ultimately is God. If you accept him, he will take care of you forever. And you can know that for sure. If you're interested in knowing the truth, you can find it. If you really seek, you can really find. That's always been true. It's always been true in the church for everybody through all time. And your sense of grievance or sadness isn't unique to you. That may be really hard to hear, but everybody gets hurt because we are all sinners and we have all fallen short of the glory of God. And the church is full of people like that. So you should go and look for what is actually true and not listen to people who might be making money or fame on a platform. You should investigate to see what they're saying, if it's true or not, and not just take their word for it. That's just true across the board, no matter what happens in any sphere of life. And it's always been true. We haven't gotten to some kind of special world just because we have social media and TikTok now, that the rules of the universe are suspended and we don't have to do investigation and work anymore because the algorithm will feed us what we want. That's always been true. That would be my challenge to anybody who feels uncomfortable. Life is uncomfortable, and it's better to deal with that head on than accept easy answers that make you feel okay for a few minutes while you're scrolling.
And I think to Christians, we've talked about this a number of times on this podcast, that they are not really clear on what they believe and why they believe it. And not really clear as they should be on who the person of God is. And all of these things are very important when we think about union with Christ. If we're to be more conformed to him, to who he is, and he said that we'll share in his sufferings, that means on one level that as people disappoint us in this broken world before eternity, we will be hurt. And so it's not like, why did these people do it? I didn't expect it. Well, you are probably not seeing biblically through the biblical lens of what the world is. And, but yet we have hope. Like you said, it's always been true. There's hope and there's truth, and Christ is building his church. So we need to find comfort in that. And I hope people will think about a counter to Reverend Carla, because it's not sufficient to just watch a whole bunch of, you know, 60-second TikToks on various different topics to really give you a worldview where you can know who God is and follow him and grow in your faith.
Yeah, I'm grieved that, you know, she's, Rev Carla is a grandmother. I think there, we need people who have had long years in the church to, if they are not well catechized in their, you know, in their twilight years, to go and find the truth themselves so that they can be there for younger generations. It's just tragic to think that somebody, you know, that she would have not investigated the truth for herself enough that she could be there for her grandchildren and children. And I'm praying that, you know, those who are of her age, who feel like they don't know, that are maybe de-churching, that they in particular would turn back and go deeper into the scripture for the sake of their children and grandchildren. It's not too late. As long as you have life, you can still go deeper into the scriptures. You can still embed yourself in a church community, and you can still find out who God is in himself.
And I think that's true for every age group, right? Because people who are Gen Xers, or people who are millennials, who, by the way, millennials are in their early 40s now. We used to talk about them like we talk about Gen Z now. There's always people that Christians can pour into the next generation to help them understand and know who God is, to point them to Christ. So this has been a lot to think about. And I have a fun question for Anne on a completely different subject. And of course, I also want to point everyone to, because it's just the end of the year and like a day, that we have had a podcast years ago with Anne on Should You Keep New Year's Resolutions? So you can check that out on our website. We also had a podcast on that. But speaking of New Year's, Anne, does your family gather to watch the ball drop to see the new actual New Year come in at midnight?
We actually have never done that, because we have a television, but it's not hooked up to anything. We have to use a cord to connect it to a computer to watch a movie or something. And so I think I've only seen the ball drop on television one time in my life. But what we have often done is, when our children were little especially, was pretend that it was midnight, like several hours earlier, and then, you know, sing a song and kiss everybody goodnight and then go to bed. We can't do that as well anymore, but I have a really hard time staying up that late.
Wow, I think that's a fun fact about Anne Kennedy. I don't know that I've ever heard anyone say they've only seen the ball drop one time. Well, Happy New Year to you, Anne, and thanks for being a guest on the Postmodern Realities Podcast.
Happy New Year to you, too. This has been great. Thank you.
You've been listening to episode 426 of the Postmodern Realities Podcast. It is the last episode of 2024. Today's guest was Anne Kennedy. She has written an article for her Theological Trends ongoing column for the Christian Research Journal. Her article is called Leaving Church, Finding a Platform, A Look at the Content of Rev Carla. And you can read it for free at equip.org. That's EQUIP.org. You won't want to miss out on subscribing to the other podcasts from the Christian Research Institute. We have the Bible Answer Man podcast, which is published Monday through Friday with the best of the week on Saturday. It's hosted by CRI President Hank Hanegraaff and is available wherever you get your favorite podcasts. In addition, Hank has a podcast called Hank Unplugged.
Hank takes you out of the studio and into his study to engage in free-flowing, essential Christian conversations on critical issues with some of the most interesting, informative, and inspirational people on the planet. And you won't want to miss out on the brand new podcast from the Christian Research Journal. Christian Research Journal Reads presents audio versions of Christian Research Journal articles. It was a print incarnation of almost 45 years. It's now on the web, as you know, with new articles every single week. So you won't want to miss these audio articles of some of our most popular and most accessed articles on our website, equip.org.